On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina.
No, I think all three are great, and I definitely want to touch on the last two. But if you wouldn't mind, I do think the first thing that you brought up, I would like to touch on that, because over the years, with interns that we've had and just people that have reached out, I think there's a lot of young coaches and future coaches that listen to this podcast, and I think there's an important point that you brought up about players being reliant on you in the weight room to do what they need to do. The example you gave with you know, trusting them to go out and do their conditioning when you're not there. I think maybe for guys that have been in the profession for a long time, that's something that doesn't seem like a huge deal. But for young coaches, I think the important point, there's two important points in that. Is one, if your players are reliant on you to execute what they need to execute, you need to think about how that sets that the next coach that has them up for what it is that they need to do. And what I mean by that is, if you send a guy, if Logan is in double A and he sends me a guy up to triple A that cannot operate without my guidance and assistance, that is now a handicap to me as a strength coach, because you're creating players that cannot do the work without your guidance. That's not self-sufficient. It's not good for the player. It's not good for you, because he is only one of 25 to 35 or 30 guys that you have. So if you're creating guys that are reliant on you, you're creating more work for the next guy in front of you. And I think it comes back to that servant leadership mindset and what can I do to make other people's lives better and easier. And I think that falls in that bucket. You need to create players that are self-sufficient. We're there to coach them, we're there to help them. That's our job. But we want to educate them, and we want to make them their own coaches, so in the event that we aren't there, they know what to do. It's not to say, hey, I want to teach you to do everything so I can just sit in a lawn chair and drink a beer. That's not it. What is it is you're not always going to be there, and they need to know what to do when you're not. Specifically off-season training, there's some guys that just go to the gym on their own. And if you've taught them well, even if they go rogue and do their own thing, like, you can rest assured that you've at least educated them with enough stuff to be beneficial. And I think the other piece of it is one of my favorite pieces, is that I think the best cultures in sports are player-led cultures. And I had an experience with that when I worked football at Temple under Matt Rhule, and I was there from 2011 to 2017, but with him from 2013 to 2016. And I can tell you single-handedly, the reason that we won a conference championship and he went on to do what he did was because he created a player-led culture where they pushed each other. And again, we saw that in when I was in Reno in 2022, same group of guys that pushed each other and held each other accountable. And I think to get to a place where that is the standard and that is what drives the work, that's that missing metric, I think, that everybody's looking for. And I think it ties in with belief. And like you said, a real concrete example, I'm working rehab right now, and Tuesdays and Thursdays, we do a county fair mobility session out on the field. And the first week we did it, I ran it with them and did all the exercises and showed them. And at the end of that second session, I said, look, you guys for the next 3 weeks are running it. You know the exercises, you guys pick leaders. Two guys need to be English speakers, two guys need to at least be Spanish speakers, and you need to hold yourselves accountable for the effort, for the attitude, for the energy, for the exercises, all of it. And I'll tell you what, it's the coolest thing in the world when I can go take a group of other guys that need attention for running mechanics, and I see them running on field three and coaching each other up and hooting and hollering. Like that to me is the pinnacle of success in our field, where you help create an environment with the players to where they lead each other and hold each other accountable, because you're not out on a diamond with them. You're not one of those nine guys. But if you can get to the point where you can help them as that group of nine hold each other accountable and execute at a high level, now we're talking World Series winning stuff. And I think that's something that goes by the wayside. And I think, like I said at the beginning, for young coaches who might be listening and get caught up in a lot of the more advanced concepts that we're talking about, if you leave this podcast with nothing else, understand the importance of educating your players and creating a player-led culture. So the other two points, Logan, kick them off, but I didn't want to let that one go unnoticed.
Yeah, that's really good stuff. I I want to actually add something there, and then I'm going to go to the training under fatigue discussion point. I feel like the beauty of this conversation in general and this choice of topic, Chris, is probably an appropriate one, because I feel like us, and I'll say us as strength and conditioning coaches in general, the field of strength and conditioning, performance, high performance, but then also specifically to baseball, like we're very much attracted to black and white data, comfortability, things that we know work and we can validate, right? Like here's my take or my opinion, and guess what? I can get some type of measurable to back that up, boost my ego, boost my confidence. Like I'm it, right? Like I told you that was going to work. And I feel like most quality interns can carry out that job responsibility, to be honest, to be completely honest, like that's not difficult. What is difficult is taking that information, contextualizing it appropriately, having the right conversations, your presentation of the material, and then also being okay with saying, I might not have that answer, and here's what we're going to do about it. I feel like that's like a hit to the ego, and strength and conditioning in general is filled with many, many, many egos, right? Like we all want to have the answer. We want to be respected. We want to be the guy that has the secret sauce or this recipe or that solution. And if we're just being honest, we work in a very gray environment that's such a technical, highly skilled endeavor. So really, to be honest with you, not all a lot that we do in the weight room transfers to begin with. We're training qualities. And I think that this conversation in general has raised some awareness around the fact that, like, look, not only is it okay to not have all the answers, but it's okay to involve maybe some people in the conversation that you wouldn't ordinarily involve. It's okay to maybe be unorthodox and developing and problem solving in a way that is forward thinking. I think that that's maybe uncanny. Like we want to just live in the house of comfortability that we've built over the number of years of our career. And that's just not how you get any better, right? Like I've grown to appreciate the people that have pushed me and challenged me, and probably the things that I wanted to do in the moment, the things that I did not want to do in the moment that I was uncomfortable with have now in retrospect been like some of the more valuable activities or things that I've participated in. It's not the things that I had all the answers to when I was coming in. So I want to say that it's like, I'm very appreciative for this opportunity, because I think that we're talking on things that are unorthodox to strength and conditioning coaches in general. And maybe because we predict that this may be a direction that our field goes, especially in baseball, I do feel like it's going to be beneficial to have some level of awareness or education on that. So maybe there's more things to come in that regard. To your point specifically, and I'm going to be short here, of training under fatigue. Man, we got a lot of smart shit here. You guys have a lot of smart shit. All right. Training under fatigue, I do feel like that it is underappreciated, Chris, to your point. I feel like that very little of our game actually happens in an optimal state. Like there's only one first inning. There's only one first AB where your heart is racing and you probably aren't in your flow state to begin with. But let's just say that you're physically fresh, right? Like let's just take a perfect world scenario. Whatever, I'm feeling good, no fatigue. Okay, well, that only happens maybe if you're lucky once per game, right? Once per night, once per week, once per month, whatever. So I feel like to only train or to think in a state of mind that's, hey, let's just focus on being in our optimal state. Yes, that's important, but we're also neglecting the 95% of the time that we're not going to be in our optimal state. And what are we going to do about it? How are we going to train ourselves to find some level or degree of comfortability within that? Nate and I know, because I'm very familiar with the Nate or the way that Nate trains some of his guys from a heart rate standpoint, utilizing some of the heart rate metrics, heart rate zones and such as an example of a way to utilize some objective data and training, you know, conditioning protocols, if you will. It doesn't have to be standard issue conditioning, but it's a way to objectify some of our training methodologies. And this is just an example from a conditioning standpoint where we can challenge guys and put guys in a environment that is going to be more representative. It's not great. It's not perfect, but more representative of what they're going to be asked to do. We could take the next step and strap them up when they're out onto the field, when they're on the mound, when they're in the cage, when they're in the turtle, whatever it is. I mean, there's more tech now than ever that is readily available to measure heart rate. A lot of orgs use GPS monitoring that gathers heart rate data. almost everyone has some type of like Whoop band, Oura Ring, Apple Watch, you name it. Someone in some place has got a measurable that can help us be a little smarter in our prescription of training under fatigue. And the first thing that comes to my mind is our heart rate data and how we can be a little more specific, and we can just be better in general at representing what it is that they get to in game, but then training at that intensity. So that way, when they approach that intensity in game, when they feel that first feel in game, it's not foreign to them. They're comfortable training in that way, or at least feeling that way. So now their focus is pulling back, and it's more reserved, and their focus can be on the task at hand and not on how their body is feeling in that moment.
Yeah, I like that. And I think maybe a different angle on it. I think that's, to me, it was when you mentioned training under fatigue, I think there's two ways to look at it. It's acute versus chronic fatigue. So like Logan, I think I like in my own vocabulary, I would categorize what you're talking about as like acute fatigue. Like how can you train and operate when you are gassed, or like that, that is the intention. The intention is for you to get to a place in the weight room or in whatever training you're doing to be gassed and still operate. I think the other layer of it is the chronic fatigue. Like you said, you know, 162 games, traveling all over, you know, you're never going to feel good. I say to our guys once a year, like it's coming up February 14th. I said, so for this year, February 13th, that is the one and only time that you are going to have 100% coins in the bank. That is it. Come in the door, shake my hand, have a good breakfast, roll out, do your scat bands, walk out. As soon as your cleats hit the turf, gone. That is the last time you're going to feel 100% until a calendar year from now. And it's being able to be okay with, hey, look, I'm not going to be 100%, but I need to develop a routine that I can stay committed to get my work done so I can sustain the level of athleticism, strength, power, you name it, that's going to help me be the best player that I can be. I think too many players, oftentimes some of the young ones that don't know any better, they're operating under this false assumption that, oh, I got to feel good. I can't do too much. I got to feel good. I got to make sure I feel good for the game. And it's like, okay, well, if you do that, maybe for a couple of weeks, you get that super compensation, right? You trained hard in the offseason, you pull the reins back, boom, super compensate. But if you're always saving yourself to try to feel good, eventually you're going to detrain no matter what the circumstances are. So it's about working with your, you know, players to develop a routine specific to them that's going to allow them to continue their training throughout the season and give stuff in the appropriate doses, and having them understand that, look, you might feel a little tired today and we can change plans. We got plan A, B, and C, but you need to commit to doing the work on a daily basis, because as soon as you start sliding and just saying, hey, I'm just going to chill because I don't feel good, and that lingers for weeks and months, now you're detrained and now you're never going to feel good, because anytime you do something, you're going to fatigue more because you've lost your base level. So I think, Logan, you did a great job on, like I said, what I would call maybe acute. And I wanted to touch on maybe the more chronic, quote unquote, grind or attrition of a 162 game schedule.
Yeah, I love it. I think this is something that probably needs to be its own episode. So I have one more topic, if you guys have time, and then I promise, I don't want to say I definitely promise, but I probably promise we'll be done. So in terms of programming, in terms of blending the work to make the player the best version of himself compared to the general health aspect, you know, let's just call it health versus performance, right? General health versus specific performance. There's a lot of, you know, water bags and 3D straps, core velo belt, the whole nine yards is kind of making its way in. And I don't know for sure, but I think probably personally, some of the pendulum, some places is swinging so far to one side that like all of training has to be specific to field performance or pushing these specific metrics, or the other side, like, no, we're not going to do any of that. That's for the hitting and pitching coaches. We are only general health, stress management, you know, specialists. Like, how do you view programming to kind of either one, address both of those as optimally as you can, or two, do you just commit to one side completely or the other? And you know, this kind of goes back full circle to the whole point of this is like, blending skill and weight room, where does that line get drawn? Like, how do you guys envision that, and how do you potentially implement that within programming with guys that obviously the guys are going to use the water bags, they're going to use the 3D straps, the core velo belts. Like, it's very popular now. Like, where does that line get drawn of like, we're doing this just to do this to like appease you, or we're actually doing this to like specifically work on something, but also we're neglecting these things, we need to do this, or do you just do one or the other? Do you know what I'm kind of getting at there?
Yeah, I think so. Nate, you want me to start us?
Yeah, go ahead.
So the first thing I'll say is I feel like it's difficult to draw lines. I just feel like that's difficult just in general. So I'd say it's unfortunately case dependent in some cases. I do feel that there needs to be some sort of integration. I hate to use the word balance because it's not a 50-50 split. It never is a 50-50 split. But I think some integration of various intervention methods to not only train general qualities from both a health and a performance standpoint, if we're talking just overall function, movement, cleanliness, efficiency, I think it really does need to start there. Then that needs to be a staple, because if not, we run the risk of layering maybe some compensatory strategies that will then down the line cost us maybe more than whatever it is that we've gained from point A to point B. I do feel like that we need to train, especially with younger players that have a lower training age, maybe an overgeneralization, but lower levels of the minor leagues, if you will. Like, there needs to be a healthy dose of general strength qualities, general power, capacity, output strategies. And I do feel like now more than ever, we are moving in a direction of integration of some of the more skill acquisition-y type protocol, if you will. And I don't know that it has to be limited to an aqua bag or ball or a med ball or a Indian club or a connector ball, but all of those are useful tools and maybe achieving some type of outcome. But I do feel like that the higher the training age, right, because it's such a highly skilled endeavor, whatever it is that we're doing, it's highly technical in nature. There has to be some emphasis on honing that highly technical skill or movement pattern or in environment, game specific, sport specific demand. So I think to neglect either end of the spectrum would probably be a disservice to the player. And then I feel like it does fall within our realm of work and our responsibility to problem solve and identify where does this player fall on the spectrum. And guess what? They fall in different parts of the spectrum depending on what time of year it is as well. So my line of thought is much different right now than it would be in October, undoubtedly. And it's much different in April than it's going to be in August. So I feel like Nate may have a different take on it working now in a rehab type environment. I'd be curious to hear like what his spin is on it from a return to play standpoint. But I feel like that we must adapt and welcome new and innovative forward-thinking ways of doing things and not stay overly opinionated in what has been, because I feel like it will cost our creativity, our effectiveness, our ability to impact each player individually, and then as a result, collectively as an organization.
Yeah, I love that. I think where... I mean, there is no right or wrong, but for lack of better terms, where people or programs go wrong is they do what I like to call, they chase the green lizard. So any new shiny thing, whether it's water bags, core velo belt, it's like they see it, boom, they run to it, and we're all in. Everybody's in, the whole staff, all the players, everybody's doing it. And what happens is it's well-intentioned, but the common denominator is that there's a lack of understanding. It's cool. It's new. It's shiny. Some guy somewhere that trains some big leaguer has a video of it working with no context around it. And now, boom, everybody's sold without truly understanding what does it do? How is it developed? What's it, who's it meant to work with? Who's it not meant to work with? How does it relate to human movement? How does it relate to sport-specific movement? So I say all that to say, I think all these things are super valuable and they do have a place in our program. I wholeheartedly believe it. We have to embrace these tools because they are super valuable. We use several of those tools and every single day in our programs. But I think that the value in them is really understanding what, you know, like I said, what it is that they do and where they fit within your offense. So kind of to touch on what Logan was saying is we need to understand what it is that we believe in and that we do and have all these different groups of coins. And then those coins are going to be allotted differently based on the needs of that player. So you might have a guy in the big leagues that he is big enough, fast enough, strong enough. Like he might have more 3D strap and aqua bag and core velo belt work because the engine is built. The spinners are on the Ferrari. He's ready to go. He just needs a little oil change. That's it. Maybe the alignment's off. Like quick little super sniper fixes. Conversely, if you have a 15, 16-year-old coming up from the DR, like they need to be introduced to those things. But is that really where we're going to spend all of our time when they have no movement awareness? They have no training age. The engine is that of a Toyota Camry. Like, is that really where we want to spend all our coins? So it's being able to have that system of checks and balances and knowing who needs what and in what dose. But I do think no matter if you're the 10-year all-star in the show or that you're the 16-year-old kid in the DR, you need to be exposed to all of it. You can't wait to expose the 16-year-old to a 3D strap until he's in AA. Like if it's important to us and we find value and we understand its place, they need to do it. Maybe just not as much as the guy that's more developed. So I think Logan, you said it perfectly. It's we have to use it all, but we have to understand it so we know where it fits.
You guys are absolutely just killing it. You're both rock stars. And again, I think, you know, from my own perspective, again, I like specific examples always. And I've been around some very good players in my time here. And I have seen some guys that their lifting program is all 3D strap, water bag, and, you know, just shoulder strengthening exercises through like a traditional shoulder program. And they ball. And there are some guys that want nothing to do with the implements. There are some guys that love weighted balls. There are some guys that the weighted balls feel horrible on their elbow and they don't want to do it. And either way is okay. And I think to your point, Nate, is more of understanding why you're doing something, understanding the adaptations that you're trying to drive, and really using whatever tool is one at your disposal and two is the best fit for getting the most out of that person and trying to really get those adaptations, whatever they may be. And whether it's a 3D strap, a water bag, a traditional barbell, kettlebell, dumbbell, a med ball, body weight, we can do it. And I think that's the beauty of strength and conditioning coaches in baseball. I have said it a zillion times at this point, like the value of being a strength coach in professional baseball and the ability to adapt and the ability to create specific demands on players with sometimes having minimal equipment and sometimes having the most equipment. We all went through the COVID era where we were, you know, giving guys programs with body weight and cinder blocks and it worked out. You know what I mean? It's less the specific tool and more the adaptation you're looking to drive and using the tool to make the most of it. And I think to your point of chasing the green lizard and, you know, just seeing the cool shiny thing, I think that's where a lot of places fall short. It drives me absolutely insane when I see something on Instagram and 3 days later, an entire program is doing it. And it's like, I have never seen you post that until I know you saw this person who has a lot of followers post it. And now all of a sudden, all of your players are using it. Like you're just implementing it because you saw it and you thought it was cool, not because you understand the context behind it. And it's hard. I a lot of times on social media, there isn't a context. You know what I mean? And for me, that's why I really value conversations like this, is because you can put a little more context around our specific situations. And if I had this exact same topic with people from two or three other different organizations, and I ran this episode three or four times, the context for all of us is similar in the sense we're all in pro ball, but difference in the sense of the resources allocated to us, the affiliates that we have, the players that we have, the philosophies that we're trying to implement as an organization. And none of that is right or wrong, as long as we understand this is us, this is our organization, this is what we're trying to maximize. And we would really love every player to use the water bag. And even if every player uses a water bag, it doesn't have to be the same exercise, right? You might do lunges with it. I might do some aggressive swinging drills with it. Somebody else might do some single leg RDL stability. Like, there's a million ways to use even that same tool that goes out and branches out. And I think for us, we've understood that for a long time, that like adaptability is so key for all of us. So when coaches come to us and they're like, we want everybody to use a water bag, we think it's valuable, like train them with it. And it's like, okay, well, as long as everybody's not doing the same drill because you saw it on Instagram, but more we're using the tool because we think it has value for the stability purposes or whatever the case you want to say, that goes a lot farther for me. And I think that's where I mentioned earlier, some of the coaches are starting to catch up to us, is like, they see these tools on social media, they come to us, I'd really love for our guys to use it, how can we implement it best within the individual context? And then boom, that's kind of that golden ticket of the blending the skill in the weight room. And then, like you guys said, case by case, some guys might be 90% water bags and 3D straps and 10% traditional strength training. And some guys might need 90% traditional strength training and 10% water bags. And some guys might have the same, you know, breakdowns, but they might be doing different exercises with the tools. And finding that sweet spot, I think, really is where we can make a lot of impact. And I think that's where the game's going. And I think, to be honest, we knocked it out of the park. And I say we, I mean, you two really knocked it out of the park. I've taken pages of notes here. So thank you for at least an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours of your time, even talking beforehand. Before we shut this down, is there anything we missed? Anything else you want to touch on? Anything else that, if, you know, people fast forwarded to the end, like, these are the points I want you to take. And then I promise we will shut it down.
You know, kick it off, Luke.
No, you shoot it. I know you got something. I see you grinning.
Yeah, we see the smile. So you got something for us.
No, I think, you know, if people fast forwarded to the end of the episode, I would want to leave them with one thing. And I think that it kind of encapsulates everything that we've talked about. And it's more pointed at those young professionals that are either young in pro baseball or just trying to get in, or, you know, whatever field that they might be in within strength and conditioning. Is I think we've talked about all these cool things, but it always comes back to the willingness to put yourself out there, the willingness to be vulnerable, the willingness to check your ego, the willingness to be okay with failure and learn from it, and the willingness to know that even in a results-based world, you need to be okay with falling in love with the process and learning the methods to then get to those results. I see a lot of people, we have young people on our staff and again, interns that come in, they're so fixated on doing everything right, just like the textbook says, just like the manual says, just like the teacher at the course says. And they're so caught up with the exercise, they're not grasping the concepts. And once you understand the concepts in anything that you do in life, once you understand the why with anything that you're doing in life, now you have the freedom, the creativity to create things based on the constraints that you have in everyday life. So you talked about the affiliate. I think the affiliate setting is the best microcosm of the point that I'm trying to make. You might not have a barbell or a thing to hook a 3D strap to, or you might not be able to bring a water bag on the plane or whatever it is. If you understand what it is that you're trying to do and trying to accomplish, you can then let your creativity take over and accomplish those things in countless ways. So if there's one thing that the people listening can take from this, specifically the young coaches, it would be that for me.
That's great. That's a really good piece of advice, Nate. Now, and I'll add something here that's, I think, piggybacks relatively nicely. And I hope is a summation of not just what we've talked on today, but then just our just being a coach and a strength and conditioning coach in general, I feel like oftentimes we can get a little misguided or lose our path when we start to dig too deep into all these different like crazy avenues of this and that and this, because we want to get to that place over there. And I feel like oftentimes we lose the reality that the player is the centerpiece, the bullseye of all of these things that we're doing. I know, and I'll speak to my own career. I feel like at times, and I have to, you know, pull myself back. At times I am so driven to dig on this, do some research on that, do that continuing ed course, program this perfect program that, oh, by the way, is never going to be carried out the way that I program it. I have to sometimes bring myself back to, and I ask myself a question of how exactly is this going to impact the person who's carrying this out? In our case, it's one of our players, right? And I feel like at times, like I lose sight of why it is that I'm doing what I'm doing. And as soon as we adopt any type of selfish motive or any type of thing that actually pulls us away from the player being the centerpiece and the driver behind what we're doing, I feel like those are the times where I've gone astray. So my piece of advice would just be like, above all else, and whatever it is that we choose to do, whether you traditional weight train or you do strictly aqua ball drills or you aren't even a strength and conditioning coach at all, whatever it is that you're doing, come from a place of service. How can I help you today? And keep that individual at the centerpiece as the bullseye of our equation here, because that's the way that we're going to optimize our duty and our responsibility as an influencer. And in our case, we're just a strength and conditioning coach in professional baseball, right? But we're here to help guide, educate, and mold these people's lives, yes, at the field, but hopefully maybe in some form of way as well. So keep those people as the centerpiece and the why behind why we're doing what we're doing. That'd kind of be my one takeaway.
Guys, I appreciate your time, your friendship, everything so much. Just your willingness to be open to talk on this. And I think we could probably keep talking forever. This has been really, really good. And I want to wish you guys the best of luck this year. Obviously, spring training's coming up soon. Try to enjoy the last little bit of free time that you may or may not have, because Nate, like you said, on February 13th, not only are the players not going to feel 100% the rest of the year, but neither are we. And we have to make sure that we take care of ourselves and our families as well. Good luck with the season, Nate, good luck with the new position. And we'll talk again soon, guys. It's been a great, great podcast. This has been an awesome episode. I've taken a ton of good notes. So thank you so much to you guys, and we'll talk soon. Okay.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for the opportunity, Chris.
All right, everybody, that's going to conclude part 3 of this interview with Logan and Nate. I hope you enjoyed all 3 parts. I hope you were able to take a ton of notes, and I hope you were able to learn a lot from the guys. I know I did in this conversation. These 2 guys are really well-versed when it comes to this kind of stuff, and I'm really appreciative of them being open and honest and just sharing their thoughts on the topics. 3 things that I took from the guys in this episode: help foster an environment where players could coach each other even if you aren't there. Be okay without having every answer. And seek to understand before aimlessly adding a new tool or modality into the training of your athletes. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.